I'm Captain Kevin Smith, and this is Throttle Up, a radio show and podcast dedicated to the proposition that critical thinking, when employed, can dramatically improve performance in whatever we are doing, enable us to solve problems that others avoid, equip us to become thought leaders instead of followers, and provide us with the intellectual resources and moral courage to support and defend America and its Constitution. Our motto is clarify, reason, win. That is, clarify the actual, employ analytic reason, and achieve mission success. Our website, throttleupradio.com, that has all kinds of information. Also, our podcast is located there, as well as iTunes. And of course, we have a blog, so please visit our website. Our support staff, Evergroove Studios for audio engineering services. They are located in Evergreen, Colorado, and Reflections Printing for multimedia support, and they are located in St. George, Utah. Our book is Critical Thinking Essentials, Quick Reference Handbook. It is available from Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and other outlets. Our broadcast time on Red State Talk Radio, we are on the weekends, both Saturday and Sunday, on the main channel, that's at 7 p.m., and the Encore channel, that's at 6 p.m. Okay, welcome back to Throttle Up for this week. Now, we are in the midst of another, you might say, special edition. This special edition deals with the IG report, the Inspector General's report on the Crossfire Hurricane investigation and the four FISA applications. The title of the report is Review of Four FISA Applications and Other Aspects of the FBI's Crossfire Hurricane Investigation. This is part two of this special session that we are looking at, examining. I guess you could say that we are taking a deep dive into this situation, and a major source is, of course, the executive summary of this Inspector General's report. The executive summary runs about, I think it's 21 pages, if I remember right, 21 pages long, and it covers quite a bit of ground. We are trying to do our best here to understand it and to provide the listeners with something meaningful, something understandable, something that is important for all of us to understand. It's important for all of us to put it in the proper context. It's important for all of us to determine if we can, not only what happened, but why did it happen? Why did something like this completely spin out of control? Why did we lose all of the control mechanisms and control functions to keep it on track, to keep it operating in a way that would do us proud? to keep it within the finest traditions of the Justice Department and the FBI. Why did it spin out of control? That is probably something that I would like to, well, for all of us to consider, not only what happened, but why did it happen? Why did it come off the rails? Why did it spin out of control? How is it that a supposedly well-intentioned persons who are or are considered to be professionals in their stock and trade, how is it that they operated so unprofessionally? How is it that they operated without concerns, dealing with proper courses of action, proper ways to determine the validity of evidence, the ability to locate, identify second sources that could corroborate the evidence that we have in front of us? How do we verify? How do we take a piece of information, whatever it might be, and how do we know? How do we determine its validity? How do we determine that it is not a fake or falsified? How do we determine that it is not some kind of counterintelligence stuff? How do we determine that it is true? And that is, of course, all of us need to have some kind of determination algorithm working for us. We can come up with our own. We could take a look at what others have done in that particular field. There is even a school of thought called signal detection theory that you could use as well if you kind of like that stuff and enjoy looking at things from an analytic standpoint and as well as a mathematical standpoint. You could even go that far. I'm not suggesting that, but some of us may like to do that. I kind of like it because I tend to be more analytically based in my thinking. So signal detection theory would be useful here. We get a piece of information and we try to determine if it is valid, if it is credible, if it is useful to us because it's real. It's not something that has been made up. It's not been falsified, and it is not fake. Okay, so this is the second section. Now, I guess I need to apologize up front because I may be, duplicating certain things from session number one. I guess some of that is unavoidable because of various things, and one of them might be the limitations of what I can do in the way I think and understand things. But all right, so we'll try to get this thing moving along and put it in the right context to see if we can understand what is going on. All right, so let me start, and again, I may be repeating myself a little bit here, but let me start this show by covering, covering what exactly was Mr. Horowitz and the Inspector General's team trying to accomplish. What was the purpose of their investigation so that we can more completely, I guess, more readily understand what they were all about, what exactly they were trying to accomplish? Okay, so here goes. We have, let's see, there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, If five major points or five major reasons for the investigation. The review, this investigation included examining these five things. One, the decision to open Crossfire Hurricane and four individual case investigations on current and former members of the Trump campaign. These members include George Papadopoulos, Carter Page, Paul Manafort, and Michael Flynn. Item two, the FBI's relationship with Christopher Steele, whom the FBI considered to be a confidential human source. CHS is also the abbreviation for that. Its receipt and use and evaluation of election reports from this individual, which we will call a Steele dossier, because that tends to be the common term that most people understand. So it's referred to here as the election reports, but we'll also parenthetically put in there the Steele dossier. Item three, four FBI applications filed with the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court in 2016 and 2017 to conduct foreign intelligence surveillance against Carter Page and whether these applications complied with department and FBI policies. One, two, three, four. Item four, the interactions of Department Attorney Bruce Orr with Steele, the FBI, Glenn Simpson of Fusion GPS, and the State Department. Item five, the FBI's use of undercover employees and CHSs, which stands for Confidential Human Sources, other than Steele, in the Crossfire Hurricane investigation, whether the FBI placed any CHSs within the Trump campaign or tasked any CHSs to report on the Trump campaign. Now, just to let you know, the answer to that particular question is yes, they did so. They did do that. They did that without the knowledge of the Trump campaign. Okay, so the opening of Crossfire Hurricane and four related investigations and early investigative steps. That's where we are right now. So let me summarize this report. Briefly summarize this report. I try not to get bogged down too much in the details here, but some of it is important for us to really understand what is this that went on. Okay, the Crossfire Hurricane investigation. This is a formal investigation opened by the FBI. It was opened in July 31st, 2016. As a result of a meeting with a foreign an official, which they term, who was a member of a foreign friendly government, an FFG, this meeting, they claim it was a meeting on May of 2016 between, George Papadopoulos and this friendly foreign government. It happened to be the ambassador, the Australian ambassador to the United States. This was an actually a meeting. It was a discussion And anyway, so that started this. It was opened, and the concern was some kind of a reference to Russian collusion with Trump campaign to deal with the upcoming election. And so the investigation was opened on four individuals as part of the Crossfire Hurricane investigation, four individuals on August of 2016. And so they opened four investigations, George Papadopoulos, Carter Page, Paul Manafort, Michael Flynn, and was opened as a full investigation, not a preliminary investigation, which is really kind of curious, because why did it open immediately as a full investigation? And it also opened up as a special investigative matter. So it's a very sensitive matter. It's called a SIM, which basically means that it is of a special, extraordinary nature that deals with sensitive matters. Okay, so as part of what the Crossfire Hurricane team was doing, they were trying to, they opened an investigation on four individuals primarily, as well as other things, but primarily their task was to investigate these four individuals because they considered them to be suspicious in some form or fashion. Okay, so they opened this investigation, and they wanted to do electronic surveillance of these individuals. Now, you can't just do that without going through the proper steps. There is a way to do it. It's called the FISA. That's dealing with some kind of a Foreign Intelligence Act that was passed some time ago. Anyway, so there is a process, and there's an organization called the FISA Court where you present your case to seemingly independent judges, and they determine if you have sufficient reason to spy on an American. You can't just spy on an American willy-nilly. You have to have supervisory authority, and you have to have court authority to do so. And so they tried that initially, the FISA application, and they targeted And here I guess I'm a little bit confused about this. So I'm trying to recover my thoughts because I am a little bit confused. But I believe that they were primarily focusing their FISA attention, their electronic surveillance on a single individual, which was Carter Page. They singled him out to gather electronic information on. And so they went to the FISA court. The initial application was denied. That's kind of, I think that's pretty interesting. The initial application was denied. For what reason? Well, it was insufficient. There wasn't compelling evidence to do so. It had to have some level of meaningful suggestions, meaningful indication that there was, in fact, something nefarious going on with respect to a foreign government. And in order to get to the bottom of this, this team had been put together, and the team was responsible, among other things, with gaining FISA authority to do electronic surveillance on these particular, this particular individual, Carter Page. Now, okay, so more information was needed. And then on September 19th, the Crossfire Hurricane team actually received, and I'm not exactly sure I kind of think I know, but I'm going to have to do a little bit more investigation of where it came from. But they did receive what we call the Steele dossier. So the Crossfire Hurricane Team receives the Steele dossier on September 19th of 2016. They go ahead and submit another FISA application on almost right away. And they do so pretty much on the same day. Okay, let me see what else. So, okay, so they immediately filed a FISA application again. This is a second filing, and the warrant was approved on Carter Page. However, the Crossfire Hurricane Team failed to inform department officials that there was, in fact, significant information available which undercut and was inconsistent with assertions in the FISA application used to justify probable cause. And that was the first major error that this whole ensuing debacle manifested. This was a very, very serious error. So they used the Steele dossier. They made some, and we're going to cover exactly the assertions that they made in this particular filing. And they did have other information that brought all of this into question, but they failed to inform anybody. So they kept it to themselves. The Crossfire Hurricane Team kept a lot of information to themselves. Okay, so we're going to take a short break here and set up for I've got two audio clips. We're going to listen to this one here. This is a short audio clip, and then I have another one that's a bit longer. These are both with Senator Lindsey Graham. So I'm going to play this short audio clip as we proceed along this road to try to understand what exactly was the Crossfire Hurricane Team doing, why were they doing it, and what did it result in? Okay. Before I do that, I just want to summarize this. The first FISA application targeted Carter Page, okay? But there were three following. So there were four total warrants, and the warrants only last for a certain period of time. Now, the first one was on October 21st, 2016. The second one, and this is particularly important, because the second one was on January 12, 2017. Now, that's after the election. The third one is April 7th of 2017. And the fourth one is June 29th of 2017. A total of 11 months, 11 continuous months, that they were secretly surveilling Carter Page. And they used the Steele dossier in every single one. They did not modify it. They did not add any additional information to it which could bring it into question. They utilized the same thing over and over again. They just reaffirmed the fact that their first application was valid to the extent that they were able to validate it. The source, Christopher Steele, was a credible source, even though they had mounting information that both of those things were simply not true. They continued to recycle this falsification of reality. So let me pull up this first audio clip and we'll listen to it. It's pretty interesting stuff.
The first thing I'd like to address is that you have a statement by Mr. Durham, the U.S. attorney in Connecticut, is looking at potential criminal liability regarding this matter. The Attorney General Barr and Mr. Horowitz. You have three different views. Well, I guess two of the views are that there was no lawful predicate to begin the investigation. I think Mr. Durham says he had more information than Mr. Horowitz. But that's not my concern right now. Three lawyers can reasonably disagree, and I trust Mr. Horowitz to give an honest view. And let's assume for a moment there was a lawful predicate. The bar is really low to open up a counterintelligence investigation. A reasonable articulation is a pretty low standard in the law. The point I want to make is, let's assume for a moment it started out okay. It sure as hell didn't end okay. What I see in this report, and nobody's reported yet, I hope some of you will look, is that while there may be reasonable differences about whether or not there was a lawful predicate, I believe there will be no debate among reasonable-minded people, particularly lawyers, about how the system not only got off the rails, but in my view became a criminal enterprise to defraud the FISA court, to deny American citizen Carter Page his constitutional rights, and to continue an operation against President Trump as President of the United States that I think was fundamentally flawed and unlawful. These are statements I don't make lightly, and these are statements based on the findings of the report. Unfortunately, at the Department of Justice and the FBI, there was a period of time when they went back to the good old days of J. Edgar Hoover, where they made stuff up. They misled people. So on page 186, it talks about the FBI identifying and interviewing the primary subsource for the Steele dossier. What I want you to understand is that Christopher Steele had a primary subsource, and this person had other people reporting to him, and that formed the basis of the dossier. What did the FBI find in January of 2017? That once they identified the subsource and actually interviewed the subsource says, the primary subsource told the FBI that he/she had not seen Steele's report until they became public that month, and that he/she made statements indicating that Steele misstated or exaggerated the primary subsource statements in multiple sections of the reporting. The primary subsource told the FBI that basically this was rumor and speculation, hearsay, bar talk, and he never believed that Steele would use the information provided in any official document. That should have been a red light for the Department of Justice and the FBI.
Okay, so that short clip here leads us into the following discussion here I want to make concerning the FISA application. Now, this happens to be, now here's where I think a lot of the abuses occurred in this initiative. First of all, I'm not convinced that the Crossfire, the opening or the forming of the Crossfire Hurricane investigation and putting together a team of investigators was based upon anything that was credible and substantive. I'm not convinced of that. It just seems to me that this was rather flimsy and weak information. Some of it may very well have been intentionally misleading. I'm not sure, but it just seems to me like it was really really a giant stretch, a giant leap of logic to even open up a formal investigation, give it a name, and man it with a bunch of investigators to try to determine something that does appear to be just somebody's pipe dream, that there was some kind of there's some kind of a global conspiracy going on somewhere, somehow, and some U.S. citizens were involved in it. Okay, so the let's see here. The opening, and here's where I think we can really begin to understand this thing from a more of a practical perspective. This is the first application for FISA authority on Carter Page. Now, remember that on September 19th, the same day that the Crossfire Hurricane team first received Steele's dossier, the team contacted the FBI OGC, which is the individual, I guess, or the organization that deals with FISA, again about seeking a FISA order for Page and specifically focused on Steele's reporting in drafting the FISA request. 2 days later, on September 21st, the FBI OGC unit chief contacted the NSDOI unit chief. Okay, these are esoteric terms that basically this is the chain of command by which you have to go through in order to seek a FISA warrant. All right, so these are individuals in that chain of command. And it advised that individual that the FBI believed it was ready to submit a formal FISA request to OI relating to Page. Almost immediately thereafter, the OI assigned an attorney to begin preparation of the application. So you can see that they were poised. They were ready to resubmit, by the way, because the first application was denied. They had gathered their forces, and they were ready to go on a moment's notice just as soon as they were able to get their hands on this Steele dossier. I think that's particularly that's particularly important here. And very, very suspicious in my mind. Okay. Here's what I'm going to do now. Now, hopefully this will be helpful to all of us. I am going to take a short break and come back. I've got another audio clip that we're going to be setting up here and listening to. It's a bit longer. Particularly important. I will introduce it by covering the seven major errors, mistakes that were made during this FISA application initiative. Be right back. Okay, welcome back from that short break. Now, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to cover this first FISA warrant application. And the IG report points out seven mistakes, if you want to characterize it that way. Seven mistakes, seven errors that were made, Sarah, seven errors of judgment, perhaps seven malfunctions in the process by which this organization conducts itself. Nevertheless, these were things that were designed to mislead, to obfuscate, to misinform. This whole idea was an attempt at misinformation. We were trying to misinform certain key people. We were engaged in some form of deception. And then I'm going to, after I cover that, I've got a longer audio clip of Senator Graham interacting with the Inspector General, Mr. Horowitz, which I think is really kind of a fascinating back and forth discussion. It helps us get a better handle on exactly what went on during the course of this crossfire hurricane operation. It was rather, when I was preparing this show in this series, it was really quite disturbing to me. I can tell you that I'm not particularly a happy camper. This is not something I like to report on, but I think it's important for all of us to understand it. This is not good news. It certainly isn't. There was forces afoot that were running amok, that were out of control, that were doing things that were clearly anti-American. This is not what we all signed up for. This is not what America is all about. We just don't do these kinds of things to one another. It runs against our core beliefs and values. Our belief and value system is being assaulted when we contemplate things that happened here, these kinds of people. So, anyway, okay. The seven items, the seven big hot items. This happens, this is dealing with, let me see, it's the first FISA application. Yes, let me read this, the paragraph heading. The first application for FISA authority on Carter Page. Okay, these are seven items that the IG uncovered. Number one, omitted information the FBI had obtained. Now, this is the application now we're talking about. The application omitted information the FBI had obtained from another U.S. government agency detailing its prior relationship with Page, including that Page had been approved as an operational contact for the other agency from 2008 to 2013, and that Page had provided information to the other agency concerning his prior contacts with certain Russian intelligence officers, one of which overlapped with facts asserted in the FISA application. Item two, included a source characterization statement asserting that Steele's prior reporting had been corroborated and used in criminal proceedings, which overstated the significance of Steele's past reporting and was not approved by Steele's handling agent as required by department procedures. Item three, omitted information relevant to the reliability of person one, a key Steele subsource, who was attributed with providing the information in Report 95 and some of the information in Report 80 and 102 relied upon in the application, namely that Steele himself told members of the Crossfire Hurricane team that Person 1 was a boaster and an egotist and may engage in embellishment. They omitted that information. Item 4, asserted that the FBI assessed that Steele did not directly provide to the press information on the September 23rd Yahoo News article based on the premise that Steele had told the FBI that he only shared his election-related research, this is the Steele dossier, with the FBI and Fusion GPS, his client. This premise was incorrect and contradicted by documentation in the files. Item 3, omitted Papadopoulos's consensually monitored statement to an FBI agent, confidential human source, in September 2016, denying that anyone associated with the Trump campaign was collaborating with Russia. Item 6, omitted Page's consensually monitored statements to an FBI agent, CHS, in August 2016, that Page had literally never met or said one word to Paul Manafort, and that Manafort had not responded to any of Page's emails. Item number 7, included Page's consensually monitored statements to an FBI agent on October 2016 that the FBI believed supported its theory that Page was an agent of Russia, but omitted other statements Page made that were inconsistent with this theory. Okay, those were the major misstatements, misconstructions, major mistakes in the initial FISA application that granted the FBI the authority to electronically surveil Carter Page. Those were the big 7 items. Now, we're going to listen to this audio clip. It's a longer one, but I do think it's important that we take a look at what exactly other people are thinking about concerning this particular event that occurred. This is Lindsey Graham interacting with Mr. Horowitz, the Inspector General.
The FBI, former FBI Director James Comey said this week that your report vindicates him. Is that a fair assessment of your report?
I think the activities we found here don't vindicate anybody who touched this.
Okay. Let's run a clip here. This is what Comey said in 2018. It would be nice to have sound. Do we have sound? Okay. Never mind, I'll read it. Director Comey, the reporter, is asking him, can I ask you a question on FISA abuse? It's a major issue for the Republicans. Do you have a total confidence in the dossier when you used it to secure a surveillance warrant and also in the subsequent renewals? This was asked in December of 2018, about a year ago. Comey, I have total confidence that the FISA process was followed, that the entire case was handled in a thoughtful, responsible way by DOJ and the FBI. I think the notion that FISA was abused here is nonsense. Would it be fair to say that you take issue with that statement?
Certainly our findings were that there were significant problems.
So when Comey speaks about FISA, you shouldn't listen. You should listen to Mr. Horowitz. He's not vindicated, and to be concerned about the FISA warrant process is not nonsense. Christopher Steele, is it fair to say that he had a political bias against Donald Trump?
Given who he was paid for, there was a bias that needed to be disclosed to the court.
Does it seem that he all personally had a bias, not just because he's on the payroll of the Democratic Party, but he...
Well, we found in the course of this and heard from Mr. Orr about his comment to him that he was desperate to prevent Mr. Trump's election.
Again, this is the guy that provides the dossier that gives the warrant over the top against Carter Page. He's paid for by the Democratic Party, and he personally believes it's bad for Donald Trump to win. He's marketing the dossier, which is a bunch of garbage, to anybody and everybody. To me, that's important. Is that important to you?
Any evidence of bias is supposed to be disclosed to the court and to the department lawyers.
Okay, so let's play this out. In January 2017, when they figure out the primary subsource, and they talk to the Russian guy that provided still all the information, what should the FBI have done at that moment?
Two things. Reconsidered internally where things stood, and most importantly, told the lawyers at the Justice Department who they were asking to help them get a FISA.
And there are five people in that interview, right?
Correct.
Okay. Are you going to make sure those five people are known to the higher-ups?
They are all part of the referral that I mentioned earlier.
Okay. Did they have a duty to report to their supervisors and eventually to the court exculpatory information?
Absolutely.
They did not?
They did not.
Why?
That's the question I can't specifically answer for you.
Can you say it wasn't because of political bias?
On decisions regarding those FISA matters, I do not know their state of mind at this point.
So we're talking about actions now and trying to figure out what would motivate people. Do you think Comey McCabe should have known?
That's a challenging question. As we explain in the report, there were multiple briefings up the chain, including to the director and the deputy director. We don't have a clear record of what precisely they were told. And as you know, as information flows upstream.
Would you be surprised if it didn't make it up the system? Something this earth-shattering?
I'm not going to speculate as to what could, might or might not.
Did Strzok know?
So Mr. Strzok's, there are three iterations of the team. Mr. Strzok actually transitions off as the on this matter in January of 2017. So it's not, I might have to go back and look precisely.
Well, in
what
February, he mentions that Steele can't verify.
Correct.
So pretty clear to me that it got up. So the court should have been told they were not.
Correct.
How did they describe this meeting to the court in the warrant application?
So in the second and third renewals, the last two applications, they told the court that they had interviewed Steele's primary subsource, upon whom Steele relied in writing the reporting, and that they found the primary subsource to be credible. They did not tell the court or the department lawyers any of the information which would have allowed them to know that if you found the primary subsource credible, you couldn't have also found the Steele reporting credible.
Did they mislead the court?
That was misleading to the court and to the department to not know that
information.
So they
did two things in January 2017. They failed to report, obviously, exculpatory information. And when they did report to the court about the interview, they lied about it.
But let me add also that a year later, in June of 2018, when the department sent a Rule 13 letter to the court informing them of other information that had not been provided to the court, the department still didn't know about the primary subsource information. And so when the department in its letter said that it still stood behind the FISA applications, they referenced the primary subsource again and the fact that the FBI found that person.
So are these the best and brightest we have?
Well, certainly the FBI, the actions of the FBI agents on this were not.
So McCabe handpicks these people. Are they representative of the department as a whole, in your view?
I certainly hope that that is not the way others are following these practices.
Yeah, me too. Okay, so let's fast forward now to June of 2016. Mr. Kleinsmith, who's he?
I'm going to defer on speaking about people who we don't name okay. specifically in the report.
Who's the guy that altered? Tell me about the guy that altered the email from the CIA.
So there was a lawyer in the Office of General Counsel at the FBI who was the line attorney working with the agents and counterparts at the National Security Division on the FISA. And that individual in June of 2017, as the last application was being prepared, and immediately following Mr. Page, Carter Page, going to news outlets after word of the FISAs hit the news media, and said to the news media, I was someone who worked with U.S. intelligence agencies, not someone who worked against them. Lawyers and agents went and said, we've got to figure out what's the story. Is that what happened? The lawyer, the OGC attorney for the FBI, reached out to a liaison at the other government agency that was at issue, asked the question, was Mr. Page a source or a contact of some sort for your organization? The report back in the email referenced the August 2016 memorandum that agency had provided to the FBI that I mentioned in my opening statement the FBI did no follow-up on, and said what that liaison's general recollection was, that Mr. Page was or is someone who had a relationship with the entity, with the other government agency, but that the lawyer should go look at the report for confirmation. The lawyer then had a conversation with the FBI agent who was going to be the affiant, the person who swore out that final application, FISA application. The agent told us, and is detailed in here, was concerned about what he had learned about what Page said publicly and wanted a definitive answer, as he put it, as to whether Page was...
Because if the agent, if Carter Page was actually telling the truth, it changes one of the predicates to consider him a foreign agent.
That was the concern of the agent. Yeah. And it was the agent who was going to be swearing out
if
complaint.
True, it would be helpful to Mr. Page.
It certainly could have and may well have been very helpful to Mr. Page.
Okay.
But it's at a minimum, without any doubt, it should have been known, it should have been followed up on, and it should have
been
told.
Well, what did this
lawyer do? The FBI. When the lawyer had the discussion with the agent, and the agent said, I want to see it, do you have it in writing? The lawyer said he did, and he forwarded the liaison's email, but altered it to insert the words, and not a source, into the email.
So he doctored it.
He doctored the original email from the liaison.
It made it look like the CIA denied knowing Mr. Page.
It flatly stated that he was not a source.
Okay, now just imagine, folks, you're representing somebody as a defense attorney and they do this to one of your clients. I hope somebody pays a price for this, whether you like Trump or not. So why did Mr. Kleinsmith, that's who we're talking about, you have said, I'll say it. What motivated him to do that?
That completes it for today. I'm a little ran out of time. We'll finish it up next week. So this is a close of another show, another Throttle Up. And before I go, I would like to acknowledge a few people. I'd like to thank my listening audience for being here, and I would like to thank Red State Talk Radio for providing us an opportunity for each and every weekend to put on this radio show that we call Throttle Up. And I would like to thank all of you veterans out there. Thank you for your service, and I would like to thank the families of the veterans. Thank you for supporting this noble cause. And I would like to thank all of you on active duty in the Guard and Reserve. Thank you for serving this great country of ours. And with that, I would like to say goodbye, and we will see you all again next week.